more heavily now. Where it touched the ground, it melted. But all about him, rock and root and branch wore a thin blanket of white. As he waited, he was conscious of how uncomfortable he felt. He could not feel his legs, hanging useless in the stirrups. But the strap around his chest was tight and chafing, and the melting snow had soaked through his gloves to chill his hands. He wondered what was keeping Theon and Maester Luin and Joseph and the rest. When he heard the rustle of leaves, Bran used his rein to make dance a turn, expecting to see his friends. But the ragged men who stepped out onto the bank of the stream were strangers. "Good day to you," he said nervously. One look, and Bran knew they were neither foresters nor farmers. He was suddenly conscious of how richly he was dressed. His surcoat was new, dark grey wool with silver buttons, and a heavy silver pin fastened his fur-trimmed cloak at the shoulders. His boots and gloves were lined with fur as well. "All alone, are you?" said the biggest of them, a bald man with a raw, wind-burnt face. "Lost in the wolf's wood, poor lad." "I'm not lost." Bran did not like the way the strangers were looking at him. He counted four, but when he turned his head, he saw two others behind him. "My brother rode off just a moment ago, and my guard will be here shortly." "Your guard, is it?" the second man said. Grey stubble covered his gaunt face. "And what would they be guarding, my little lord? Is that a silver pin I see on your cloak?" "Pretty," said a woman's voice. She scarcely looked like a woman, tall and lean, with the same hard face as the others, her hair hidden beneath a bowl-shaped half-helm. The spear she held was 8 feet of black oak, tipped in rusted steel. "Let's have a look," said the big bald man. Bran watched him anxiously. The man's clothes were filthy, fallen almost to pieces. Patched here was brown, and here was blue, and there was a dark green, and faded everywhere to grey. But once the cloak might have been black. The grey stubbly man wore black rags too, he saw with a sudden start. Suddenly Bran remembered the oathbreaker his father had beheaded. The day they had found the wolf pups, that man had worn black as well. And father said he had been a deserter from the night's watch. "No man is more dangerous," he remembered Lord Eddard saying. "The deserter knows his life is forfeit if he is taken. So he will not flinch from any crime, no matter how vile or cruel." "The pin, lad," the big man said. He held out his hand. "We'll take the horse too," said another of them, a woman shorter than Rob, with a broad, flat face and lank yellow hair. "Get down and be quick about it." A knife slid from her sleeve into her hand, its edge jagged as a saw. "No," Bran blurted, "I can't." The big man grabbed his reins before Bran could think to wheel Dance around and gallop off. "You can, lordling, and will, if you know what's good for you." "Steve, look how he's strapped on," the tall woman pointed with her spear. "Might be it's the truth he's telling." "Straps, is it?" Steve said. He drew a dagger from a sheath at his belt. "There's ways to deal with straps." "You some kind of cripple?" asked the short woman. Bran flared. "I'm Brandon Stark of Winterfell, and you'd better let go of my horse, or I'll see you all dead." The gaunt man, with a grey, stubbled face, laughed. "The boy is a Stark, true enough. Only a Stark would be fool enough to threaten where smarter men would beg." "Cut his little cock off and stuff it in his mouth," suggested the short woman. "That should shut him up." "You're as stupid as you are ugly, Harley," said the tall woman. "The boy's worth nothing dead but alive. Gods be damned, think what Mance would give to have Benjen Stark's own blood to hostage." "Mance be damned," the big man cursed. "You want to go back there, Usher? More fool you. Think the White Walkers would care if you have a hostage?" He turned back to Bran and slashed at the strap around his thigh. The leather parted with a sigh. The stroke had been quick and careless, biting deep. Looking down, Bran glimpsed pale flesh where the wool of his legging had parted. Then the blood began to flow. He watched the red stain spread, feeling light-headed, curiously apart. There'd been no pain, not even a hint of feeling. The big man grunted in surprise.
Put down your steel now, and I promise you, you shall have a quick and painless death,
Rob called out. Bran looked up in desperate hope, and there he was. The strength of his words were undercut by the way his voice cracked with strain. He was mounted, the bloody carcass of an elk slung across the back of his horse, his sword in a gloved hand. The brother, said the man with a grey, stubbly face.
He's a fierce one, mocked the short woman. Harley, they called her. You mean to fight us, boy? Don't be a fool, lad. You're one against six.
The tall woman, Usher, levelled her spear.
Off the horse and throw down the sword. We'll thank you kindly for the mount and for the venison, and you and your brother can be on your way.
Rob whistled. They heard the faint sound of soft feet on wet leaves. The undergrowth parted, low-hanging branches giving up their accumulation of snow, and grey wind and summer emerged from the green. Summer sniffed the air and growled.
Wolves, gasped Harley.
Dire wolves, Bran said. Still half-grown, they were as large as any wolf he had ever seen. But the differences were easy to spot if you knew what to look for. Maester Lewin and Farlan, the kennel master, had taught him. A direwolf had a bigger head and longer legs in proportion to its body, and its snout and jaw were markedly leaner and more pronounced. There was something gaunt and terrible about them as they stood there amid the gently falling snow. Fresh blood spotted Grey Wind's muzzle.
Dogs, the big bald man said contemptuously. Yet I'm told there's nothing like a wolfskin cloak to warm a man by night.
He made a sharp gesture.
Take them!
Rob shouted,
Winterfell!
And kicked his horse. The gelding plunged down the bank as the ragged men closed. A man with an axe rushed in, shouting and heedless. Rob's sword caught him full in the face with a sickening crunch and a spray of bright blood. The man with the gaunt, stubbly face made a grab for the reins, and for half a second he had them, and then Grey Wind was on him, bearing him down. He fell back into the stream with a splash and a shout, flailing wildly with his knife as his head went under. The direwolf plunged in after him, and the white water turned red where they had vanished. Rob and Usher matched blows in midstream. A long spear was a steel-headed serpent, flashing out at his chest, once, twice, three times. But Rob parried every thrust with his longsword, turning the point aside. On the fourth or fifth thrust, the tall woman overextended herself and lost her balance, just for a second. Rob charged, riding her down. A few feet away, Summer darted in and snapped at Harley. The knife bit at his flank. Summer slid away, snarling, and came rushing in again. This time his jaws closed around her calf. Holding the knife with both hands, the small woman stabbed down, but the direwolf seemed to sense the blade coming. He pulled free for an instant, his mouth full of leather and cloth and bloody flesh. When Harley stumbled and fell, he came at her again, slamming her backward, teeth tearing at her belly. The sixth man ran from the carnage, but not far. As he went scrambling up the far side of the bank, Grey Wind emerged from the stream, dripping wet. He shook the water off and bounded after the running man, hamstringing him with a single snap of his teeth and going for the throat as the screaming man slid back down toward the water. And then there was no one left but the big man, Stiv. He slashed at Bran's chest strap, grabbed his arm, and yanked. Suddenly Bran was falling. He sprawled on the ground, his legs tangled under him, one foot in the stream. He could not feel the cold of the water, but he felt the steel when Stiv pressed his dagger to his throat.
Back away, the man warned, or I'll open the boy's windpipe, I swear it. Rob reined his horse in, breathing hard. The fury went out of his eyes, and his sword arm dropped. In that moment, Bran saw everything. Summer was savaging Harley, pulling glistening blue snakes from her belly. Her eyes were wide and staring. Bran could not tell whether she was alive or dead. The gray, stubbly man and the one with the axe lay unmoving. But Usher was on her knees, crawling towards her fallen spear. Grey Wind padded toward her, dripping wet. "Call him off," the big man shouted. "Call them both off, or the crippled boy dies now." "Grey Wind, Summer, to me," Rob said. The direwolves stopped, turned their heads. Grey Wind loped back to Rob. Summer stayed where he was, his eyes on Bran and the man beside him. He growled. His muzzle was wet and red, but his eyes burned. Usher used the butt end of her spear to lever herself back to her feet. Blood leaked from a wound on the upper arm where Rob had cut her. Bran could see sweat trickling down the big man's face. Stiv was as scared as he was, he realized. "Starks," the man muttered. "Bloody Starks." He raised his voice. "Usher, kill the wolves and get his sword." "Kill them yourself," she replied. "I'll not be getting near those monsters." For a moment, Stiv was at a loss. His hand trembled. Bran felt a trickle of blood where the knife pressed against his neck. The stench of the man filled his nose. He smelled of fear. "You," he called out to Rob, "you have a name?" "I'm Rob Stark, the heir to Winterfell."
"This is your brother?"
"Yes."
"You want him alive? Do what I say. Off the horse."
Rob hesitated a moment. Then slowly and deliberately, he dismounted and stood with his sword in hand.
"Now, kill the wolves."
Rob did not move.
"You do it. The wolves or the boy?"
"No," Bran screamed. If Rob did as they asked, Stiv would kill them both anyway, once the direwolves were dead. The bald man took hold of his hair with his free hand and twisted it cruelly till Bran sobbed in pain.
"You shut your mouth, cripple, you hear me?"
He twisted harder.
"You hear me?"
A low thrum came from the woods behind them. Stiv gave a choked gasp as a half foot of razor-tipped broadhead suddenly exploded out of his chest. The arrow was bright red, as if it had been painted in blood. The dagger fell away from Bran's throat. The big man swayed and collapsed, face down in the stream. The arrow broke beneath him. Bran watched his life go swirling off in the water. Usher glanced around as Father's guardsman appeared from beneath the trees, steel in hand. She threw down her spear.
"Mercy, my lord," she called to Rob.
The guardsmen had a strange, pale look to their faces as they took in the scene of slaughter. They eyed the wolves uncertainly. And when Summer returned to Harley's corpse to feed, Joseph dropped the knife and scrambled for the bush, heaving. Even Maester Lewin seemed shocked as he stepped from behind a tree, but only for an instant. Then he shook his head and waded across the stream to Bran's side.
"Are you hurt?"
"He cut my leg," Bran said, "but I couldn't feel it." As the maester knelt to examine the wound, Bran turned his head. Theon Greyjoy stood beside a sentinel tree. His bow in hand, he was smiling, ever smiling. A half dozen arrows were thrust into the soft ground at his feet, but it had taken only one. "A dead enemy is a thing of beauty," he announced. "John always said you were an ass, Greyjoy," Rob said loudly. "I ought to chain you up in the yard and let Bran take a few practice shots at you. You should be thanking me for saving your brother's life." "What if you had missed the shot?" Rob said. "What if you'd only wounded him? What if you'd made his hand jump or hit Bran instead? For all you knew, the man might have been wearing a breastplate. All you could see was the back of his cloak. What would have happened to my brother then?" "Did you ever think of that, Greyjoy?" Theon's smile was gone. He gave a sullen shrug and began to pull his arrows from the ground one by one. Rob glared at his guardsman. Where were you? He demanded of them. I was sure you were close behind us.
The men traded unhappy glances.
We were following, my lord, said Quint,
the youngest of them, his beard a soft brown fuzz.
Only first, we waited for Maester Lewin and his ass. Oh, begging your pardons. And then, well, as it were...
He glanced over at Theon and quickly looked away abashed.
I spied a turkey, Theon said, annoyed by the question. How was I to know that you'd leave the boy alone?
Rob turned his head to look at Theon once more. Bran had never seen him so angry, yet he said nothing. Finally, he knelt beside Maester Lewin. How badly is my brother wounded?
No more than a scratch, the maester said.
He wet a cloth in a stream to clean the cut.
Two of them wear the black, he told Rob as he worked.
Rob glanced over at where Stiv lay sprawled in the stream, his ragged black cloak moving fitfully as the rushing waters tugged at it. Deserters from the Night's Watch, he said grimly. They must have been fools to come so close to Winterfell.
Folly and desperation are oft times hard to tell apart, said Maester Lewin.
Shall we bury them, my lord? Said Quint.
They would not have buried us, Rob said.
Hack off their heads. We'll send them back to the wall. Leave the rest for the carrion crows.
And this one?
Quint jerked a thumb towards Usher. Rob walked over to her. She was a head taller than he was, but she dropped to her knees at his approach.
Give me my life, my Lord of Stark, and I'm yours.
Mine? What would I do with an oathbreaker?
I broke no oaths. Stiv and Wallen flew down off the wall, not me. The Black Crow's got no place for women.
Theon Greyjoy sauntered closer.
Give her to the wolves, he urged Rob.
The woman's eyes went to what was left of Harley and just as quickly away. She shuddered. Even the guardsmen looked queasy.
She's a woman, Rob said.
A wildling, Bran told him. She said they should keep me alive so they could take me to Mance Rayder.
Do you have a name? Rob asked her.
Usher, as it please the Lord, she muttered sourly.
Maester Lewin stood.
We might do well to question her.
Bran could see the relief on his brother's face.
As you say, Maester. Wayne, bind her hands. She'll come back to Winterfell with us, and live or die by the truth she gives us.
Tyrion.
You want eat?
Maud asked, glowering. He had a plate of boiled beans in one thick, stub-fingered hand. Tyrion Lannister was starved, but he refused to let this brute see him cringe.
A leg of lamb would be pleasant, he said from the heap of soiled straw in the corner of his cell. Perhaps a dish of peas and onions, some fresh baked bread with butter, and a flagon of mulled wine to wash it down, or beer, if that's easier. I try not to be over particular.
As beans, Maud said. Here.
He held out the plate. Tyrion sighed. The turnkey was 20 stone of gross stupidity, with rotting brown teeth and small dark eyes. The left side of his face was slick with scar, where an axe had cut off his ear and part of his cheek. He was as predictable as he was ugly. But Tyrion was hungry. He reached up for the plate. Maud jerked it out of the way, grinning.
It's here,
he said, holding it beyond Tyrion's reach. The dwarf climbed stiffly to his feet, every joint aching.
Must we play the same fool's game with every meal?
He made another grab for the beans. Maud shambled backwards, grinning through his rotten teeth.
It's here, dwarf man.
He held the plate out at arm's length over the edge where the cell ended and the sky began.
You not want eat? Here, come, take.
Tyrion's arms were too short to reach the plate, and he was not about to step that close to the edge. All it would take
would be a quick shove of Maud's heavy white belly, and he would end up a sickening red splotch on the stones of sky, like so many other prisoners of the area over the centuries.
Come to think of it, I'm not hungry after all, he declared, retreating to the corner of his cell.
Maud grunted and opened his thick fingers. The wind took the plate, flipping it over as it fell. A handful of beans sprayed back at them as the food tumbled out of sight. The turnkey laughed, his gut shaking like a bowl of pudding. Tyrion felt a pang of rage.
You fucking son of a pox-ridden ass, he spat. I hope you die of a bloody flux.
For that, Maud gave him a kick, driving a steel-toed boot hard into Tyrion's ribs on the way out.
I take it back, he gasped as he doubled over on the straw. I'll kill you myself, I swear it.
The heavy iron-bound door slammed shut. Tyrion heard the rattle of keys. For a small man, he had been cursed with a dangerously big mouth, he reflected, as he crawled back to the corner of what the Aerons laughably called their dungeon. He huddled beneath the thin blanket that was his only bedding, staring out at a blaze of empty blue sky and distant mountains that seemed to go on forever, wishing he still had the shadow skin cloak he'd won from Marillion at dice after the singer had stolen it off the body of the brigand chief. The skin had smelt of blood and mold, but it was warm and thick. Maud had taken it the moment he laid eyes on it. The wind tugged at his blanket with gusts sharp as talons. His cell was miserably small, even for a dwarf. Not 5 feet away, where a wall ought to have been, where a wall would be in a proper dungeon, the floor ended and the sky began. He had plenty of fresh air and sunshine and the moon and stars by night, but Tyrion would have traded it all in an instant for the dankest, gloomiest pit in the bowels of Casterly Rock.
You fly,
Maud had promised him when he'd shoved him into the cell.
20 day, 30, 50 maybe, then you fly.
The Arryns kept the only dungeon in the realm where the prisoners were welcome to escape at will. That first day, after girding up his courage for hours, Tyrion had lain flat on his stomach and squirmed to the edge to poke out his head and look down. Sky was 600 feet below, with nothing between but empty air. If he craned his neck out as far as he could go, he could see other cells to his right and left and above him. He was a bee in a stone honeycomb, and someone had torn off his wings. It was cold in the cell. The wind screamed night and day, and worst of all, the floor sloped. Ever so slightly, yet it was enough. He was afraid to close his eyes, afraid that he might roll over in his sleep and wake in sudden terror as he went sliding over the edge. Small wonder the sky cells drove men mad. God save me, some previous tenant had written on the wall in something that looked suspiciously like blood. The blue is calling. At first, Tyrion wondered who he'd been and what had become of him. Later, he decided that he would rather not know. If only he had shut his mouth. The wretched boy had started it, looking down on him from a throne of carved weirwood beneath the moon and falcon banners of House Aerin. Tyrion Lannister had been looked down on all his life, but seldom by roomy-eyed six-year-olds who needed to stuff fat cushions under their cheeks to lift them to the height of a man.
Is he the bad man?
The boy had asked, clutching his doll. He is, the Lady Lysa had said, from the lesser throne beside him. She was all in blue, powdered and perfumed for her suitors who filled her court.
He is so small, the Lord of the Eyrie said, giggling.
This is Tyrion, the imp of House Lannister, who murdered your father. She raised her voice so it carried down the length of High Hall of the Eyrie, ringing off the milk-white walls and the slender pillars so every man could hear it. He slew
the hand of the king.
Or did I kill him too?
Tyrion had said, like a fool. That would have been a very good time to have kept his mouth closed and his head bowed. He could see that now. Seven hells, he had seen it then. The high hall of the Aerons was long and austere, with a forbidding coldness to its walls of blue-veined white marble. But the faces around him had been colder by far. The power of Casterly Rock was far away, and there were no friends of the Lannisters in the Vale of Arryn. Submission and silence would have been his best defenses. But Tyrion's mood had been too foul for sense. To his shame, he had faltered during the last leg of their day-long climb up to the Eyrie, his stunted legs unable to take him any higher. Bronn had carried him the rest of the way, and the humiliation poured oil on the flames of his anger.
"It would seem I've been a busy little fellow," he said, with a bitter sarcasm. "I wonder when I found the time to do all this slaying and murdering."
He ought to have remembered who he was dealing with. Lysa Aaron and her half-sane, weakling son had not been known at court for their love of wit, especially when it was directed at them. "Imp," Lysa said coldly, "you will guard that mocking tongue of yours and speak to my son politely, or I promise you, you will have cause to regret it. Remember where you are. This is the Eyrie, and these are knights of the Vale you see around you, true men who love John Aaron well. Every one of them would die for me."
"Lady Aaron, should any harm come to me, my brother Jaime will be pleased to see that they do."
Even as he spat out the words, Tyrion knew they were folly.
"Can you fly, my lord of Lannister?" Lady Lysa asked. "Does a dwarf have wings? If not, you would be wiser to swallow the next threat that comes to mind." "I made no threats," Tyrion said. "That was a promise."
Little Lord Robert hopped to his feet at that, so upset he dropped his doll.
"You can't hurt us," he screamed. "No one can hurt us here. Tell him, Mother, tell him he can't hurt us here."
The boy began to twitch. "The area is impregnable," Lysa Aaron declared calmly. She drew her son close, holding him safe in the circle of her plump white arms. "The imp is trying to frighten us, sweet baby. The Lannisters are all liars. No one will hurt my sweet boy." The hell of it was, she was no doubt right, having seen what it took to get here. Tyrion could well imagine how it would be for a knight trying to fight his way up in armor while stones and arrows poured down from above and enemies contested with him for every step. Nightmare did not begin to describe it. Small wonder the area had never been taken. Still, Tyrion had been unable to silence himself.
"Not impregnable," he said, "merely inconvenient."
Lord Robert pointed down, his hand trembling.
"You're a liar! Mother, I want to see him fly!"
The two guardsmen in sky-blue cloaks seized Tyrion by the arms, lifting him off the floor. The guards only know what might have happened then, were it not for Catelyn Stark. "Sister," she called out from where she stood below the thrones, "I beg you to remember this man is my prisoner. I will not have him harmed." Lysa Aaron glanced at her sister coolly for a moment, then rose and swept down on Tyrion, her long skirts trailing after her. For an instant, he feared she would strike him. But instead, she commanded them to release him. Her men shoved him to the floor. His legs went out from under him, and Tyrion fell. He must have made quite a sight as he struggled to his knees, only to feel his right leg spasm, sending him sprawling once more. Laughter boomed up and down the high hall of the Aerons. "My sister's little guest is too weary to stand," Lady Lysa announced. "Sir Vardis, take him down to the dungeon. A rest in one of our sky cells would do him much good." The guardsman jerked him upright. Tyrion Lannister dangled between them, kicking feebly, his face red with shame.
"I will remember this," he told them all, as they carried him off.
And so he did.
for all the good it did him.
At first he had consoled himself that this imprisonment could not last long. Lysa Aaron wanted to humble him, that was all. She would send for him again, and soon. If not her, then Catelyn Stark would want to question him. This time he would guard his tongue more closely. They dare not kill him out of hand. He was still a Lannister of Castle Rock, and if they shed his blood, it would mean war. Or so he had told himself. Now he was not so certain. Perhaps his captors only meant to let him rot there, but he feared he did not have the strength to rot for long. He was growing weaker every day, and it was only a matter of time until Maud's kicks and blows did him serious harm, provided the jailer did not starve him to death first. A few more nights of cold and hunger, and the blue would start calling to him too. He wondered what was happening beyond the walls, such as they were, of his cell. Lord Tywin would surely have sent out riders when the word reached him. Jaime might be leading a host through the Mountains of the Moon even now, unless he was riding north against Winterfell instead. Did anyone outside the Vale even suspect where Catelyn Stark had taken him? He wondered what Cersei would do when she heard. The king could order him freed, but would Robert listen to his queen or his hand? Tyrion had no illusions about the king's love for his sister. If Cersei kept her wits about her, she would insist the king sit in judgment of Tyrion himself. Even Ned Stark could scarcely object to that, not without impugning the honor of the king. And Tyrion would be only too glad to take his chances in a trial. Whatever murders they might lay at his door, the Starks had no proof of anything so far as he could see. Let them make their case before the Iron Throne and the Lords of the Land. It would be the end of them, if only Cersei were clever enough to see that. Tyrion Lannister sighed. His sister was not without a certain low cunning, but her pride blinded her. She would see the insult in this, not the opportunity. And Jaime was even worse, rash and headstrong and quick to anger. His brother never untied a knot when he could slash it in two with his sword. He wondered which of them had sent the footpad to silence the Stark boy, and whether they had truly conspired at the death of Lord Aaron. If the old hand had been murdered, it was deftly and subtly done. Men of his age died of sudden illness all the time. In contrast, sending some oaf with a stolen knife after Brandon Stark struck him as unbelievably clumsy. And wasn't that peculiar, come to think of it? Tyrion shivered. Now there was a nasty suspicion. Perhaps the direwolf and the lion were not the only beasts in the woods. And if that was true, someone was using him as a cat's paw. Tyrion Lannister hated being used. He would have to get out of here, and soon. His chances of overpowering Maud were small to none, and no one was about to smuggle him a 600-foot-long rope, so he would have to talk himself free. His mouth had gotten him into this cell. It could damn well get him out. Tyrion pushed himself to his feet, doing his best to ignore the slope of the floor beneath him with its ever-so-subtle tug towards the edge. He hammered on the door with his fist. Maud! He shouted. Turnkey! Maud! I want you! He had to keep it up a good 10 minutes before he heard footsteps. Tyrion stepped back an instant before the door opened with a crash.
Making noise!
Maud growled, with blood in his eyes. Dangling from one meaty hand was a leather strap wide and thick, doubled over in his fist. Never show them you're afraid, Tyrion reminded himself.
How would you like to be rich, he asked.
Maud hit him. He swung the strap backhand lazily, but the leather caught Tyrion high on the arm. The force of it staggered him, and the pain made him grit his teeth.
No mouth, dwarf man,
Maud warned him.
Gold, Tyrion said, miming a smile. Castle Rock is full of gold. Ah! This time the blow was a forehand,
and Maud put more of his arm into the swing, making the leather crack and jump. It caught Tyrion in the ribs and dropped him to his knees, whimpering. He forced himself to look up at the jailer.
As rich as the Lannisters, he wheezed. That's what they say, Maud.
Maud grunted. The strap whistled through the air and smashed Tyrion full in the face. The pain was so bad, he did not remember falling. But when he opened his eyes again, he was on the floor of his cell. His ear was ringing and his mouth was full of blood. He groped for purchase to push himself up, and his fingers brushed against nothing. Tyrion snatched his hand back as fast as if it had been scalded and tried his best to stop breathing. He had fallen right on the edge, inches from the blue.
More to say?
Maud held the strap between his fists and gave it a sharp pull. The snap made Tyrion jump. The turnkey laughed.
He won't push me over, Tyrion told himself desperately as he clawed away from the edge. Catelyn Stark wants me alive. He doesn't dare kill me.
He wiped the blood off his lips with the back of his hand, grinned and said,
That was a stiff one, Maud.
The jailer squinted at him, trying to decide if he was being mocked.
I could make good use of a strong man like you.
The strap flew at him, but this time Tyrion was able to cringe away from it. He took a glancing blow to the shoulder, nothing more.
Gold, he repeated, scrambling backward like a crab. More gold than you'll see here in a lifetime. Enough to buy land, women, horses. You could be a lord, Lord Maud.
Tyrion hawked up a glob of blood and phlegm and spat it out into the sky.
It's no gold,
Maud said. He's listening, Tyrion thought. They relieved me of my purse when they captured me, but the gold is still mine. Catelyn Stark may take a man prisoner, but she'd never stoop to rob him. That wouldn't be honorable. Help me, and all the gold is yours. Maud's trap licked out, but it was a half-hearted, desultory swing, slow and contemptuous. Tyrion caught the leather in his hand and held it prisoned.
There will be no risk to you. All you need to do is deliver a message.
The jailer yanked his leather strap free of Tyrion's grasp.
Message,
he said, as if he'd never heard the word before. His frown made deep creases in his brow.
You heard me, my lord. Only carry my word to your lady. Tell her...
What?
What would possibly make Lysa Arryn relent?
The inspiration came to Tyrion Lannister suddenly.
Tell her that I wish to confess my crimes.
Maud raised his arm, and Tyrion braced himself for another blow, but the turnkey hesitated. Suspicion and greed warred in his eyes. He wanted that gold, yet he feared a trick. He had the look of a man who had often been tricked.
It's lie,
he muttered darkly.
Dwarf man, cheat me.
I will put my promise in writing, Tyrion vowed. Some illiterates held writing in disdain. Others seemed to have a superstitious reverence for the written word, as if it were some sort of magic. Fortunately, Maud was one of the latter. The turnkey lowered the strap.
Writing down gold, much gold.
Oh, much gold, Tyrion assured him. The purse is just a taste, my friend. My brother wears armor of solid gold plate.
In truth, Jaime's armor was gilded steel, but this oaf would never know the difference. Maud fingered his strap thoughtfully, but in the end he relented and went to fetch paper and ink. When the letter was written, the jailer frowned at it suspiciously.
Now deliver my message, Tyrion urged.
He was shivering in his sleep when they came for him late that night. Maud opened the door but kept his silence. Sir Varys Egan woke Tyrion with the point of his boot.
On your feet, imp. My lady wants to see you.
Tyrion rubbed the sleep from his eyes and put on a grimace he scarcely felt.
No doubt she does, but what makes you think I wish to see her?
Sir Vardis frowned. Tyrion remembered him well from the years he had spent at King's Landing as the captain of the Hand's household guard, a square, plain face, silver hair, heavy build, and no humor whatsoever.
Your wishes are not my concern. On your feet, or I'll have you carried.
Tyrion clambered awkwardly to his feet.
A cold night, he said casually, and the High Hall is so draughty. I don't wish to catch a chill. Maud, if you would be so good, fetch my cloak.
The jailer squinted at him, face dull with suspicion.
My cloak, Tyrion repeated. The shadow skin you took from me for safekeeping, you recall?
Get him the damnable cloak, Sir Vardis said. Maud did not dare grumble. He gave Tyrion a glare that promised future retribution, yet he went for the cloak. When he draped it around his prisoner's neck, Tyrion smiled.
My thanks. I shall think of you whenever I wear it.
He flung the trailing end of the long fur over his right shoulder and felt warm for the first time in days.
Lead on, Sir Vardis.
The High Hall of the Aerons was aglow with the light of 50 torches, burning in the sconces along the walls. The Lady Lysa wore black silk, with the moon and falcon sewn on her breast in pearls. Since she did not look the sort to join the Night's Watch, Tyrion could only imagine that she had decided mourning clothes were appropriate garb for a confession. Her long auburn hair, woven into an elaborate braid, fell across her left shoulder. The taller throne beside her was empty. No doubt the little lord of the area was off, shaking in his sleep. Tyrion was thankful for that much, at least. He bowed deeply and took a moment to glance around the hall. Lady Aeryn had summoned her knights and retainers to hear his confession, as he had hoped. He saw Sir Brynden Tully's craggy face and Lord Nestor Royce's bluff one. Beside Nestor stood a younger man with fierce black side whiskers who could only be his heir, Sir Albar. Most of the principal houses of the Vale were represented. Tyrion noted Sir Lynn Corbray, slender as a sword, Lord Hunter with his gouty legs, the widowed Lady Wainwood, surrounded by her sons. Others sported sigils he did not know, broken lance, green viper, burning tower, winged chalice. Among the lords of the Vale were several of his companions from the high road. Sir Roderick Cassell, pale from half-healed wounds, stood with Sir Willis Woad beside him. Marillion the singer had found a new wood harp. Tyrion smiled. Whatever happened here tonight, he did not wish it to happen in secret, and there was no one like a singer for spreading a story near and far. In the rear of the hall, Bronn lounged beneath a pillar. The free rider's black eyes were fixed on Tyrion, and his hand lay lightly on the pommel of his sword. Tyrion gave him a long look, wondering. Catelyn Stark spoke first. You wish to confess your crimes, we're told?
I do, my lady, Tyrion answered.
Lysa Aeryn smiled at her sister. The sky cells always break them. The guards can see them there, and there's no darkness to hide in.
He does not look broken to me, Lady Catelyn said.
Lady Lysa paid her no mind. Say what you will, she commanded Tyrion.
And now to roll the dice, he thought, with another quick glance back at Bronn. Where to begin, eh? I'm a vile little man, I confess it. My crimes and sins are beyond counting, my lords and ladies. I have lain with whores, not once, but hundreds of times. I have wished my own lord father dead, and my sister, our gracious queen as well.
Behind him someone chuckled.
I have not always treated my servants with kindness. I have gambled. I have even cheated, I blush to admit. I have said many cruel and malicious things about the noble lords and ladies of the court.
That drew outright laughter.
Once I...
Silence!
Lysa Aaron's pale round face had turned a burning pink. What do you imagine you're doing, dwarf? Tyrion cocked his head to one side. Why, confessing my crimes, my lady. Catelyn Stark took a step forward. You are accused of sending a hard knife to slay my son Bran in his bed, and of conspiring to murder Lord John Aaron, the Hand of the King. Tyrion gave a helpless shrug. Those crimes I cannot confess, I fear. I know nothing of any murders. Lady Lysa rose from her weirwood throne. I will not be made muck of. You have had your little jape, imp. I trust you enjoyed it. Savardas, take him back to the dungeons, but this time find him a smaller cell with a floor more sharply sloped. Is this how justice is done in the Vale? Tyrion roared so loudly that Savardas froze for a moment. Does honor stop at the bloody gate? You accuse me of crimes. I deny them. So you throw me into an open cell to freeze and starve? He lifted his head to give them all a good look at the bruises Mort had left on his face. Where is the king's justice? Is this Eyrie not part of the Seven Kingdoms? I stand accused, you say. Very well. I demand a trial. Let me speak, and let my truth or falsehood be judged openly in the sight of gods and men. A low murmuring filled the high hall. He had her, Tyrion knew. He was highborn, the son of the most powerful lord in the realm, the brother of the queen. He could not be denied a trial. Guardsmen in sky-blue cloaks had started towards Tyrion, but Savardas bid them halt and looked to Lady Lysa. Her small mouth twitched in a petulant smile. If you are tried and found to be guilty of the crimes for which you stand accused, then by the king's own laws, you must pay with your own life's blood. We keep no headsmen in the Eyrie, my lord of Lannister. Open the moon door. The press of spectators parted. A narrow weirwood door stood between two slender marble pillars, a crescent moon carved in the white wood. Those standing closest edged backward as a pair of guardsmen marched through. One man removed the heavy bronze bars, the second pulled the door inward. Their blue cloaks rose snapping from their shoulders, caught in the sudden gust of wind that came howling through the open door. Beyond was the emptiness of the night sky, speckled with cold, uncaring stars. "Behold the king's justice," Lysa Aaron said. Torch flames fluttered like pennons along the wall, and here and there the odd torch guttered out. "Lysa, I think this unwise," Catelyn Stark said as the black wind swirled around the hall. Her sister ignored her. "You want a trial, my lord of Lannister?" "Very well, a trial you shall have. My son will listen to whatever you care to say, and you shall hear his judgment. Then you may leave, by one door or the other." She looked so pleased with herself, Tyrion thought, and small wonder. How could a trial threaten her when her weakling son was the Lord Judge? Tyrion glanced at her moon door.
"Mother, I want to see him fly,"
the boy had said. How many men had the snot-nosed little wretch sent through that door already? "I thank you, my good lady, but I see no need to trouble Lord Robert," Tyrion said politely. "The guards know the truth of my innocence. I will have their verdict, not the judgment of men. I demand trial by combat." A storm of sudden laughter filled the high hall of the Aerons. Lord Nestor Royce snorted. Sir Willis chuckled. Sir Lynn Corbray guffawed. And others threw back their heads and howled until tears ran down their faces. Marillion clumsily plucked a gay note on his new wood harp with the fingers of his broken hand. Even the wind seemed to whistle with derision as it came skirling through the moon door. Lysa Aaron's watery blue eyes looked uncertain. He had caught her off balance. "You have that right, to be sure."
The young knight, with a green viper emblazoned on his surcoat, stepped forward and went to one knee. My lady, I beg the boon of championing your cause. The honor should be mine, O Lord Hunter said. For the love I bore your lord husband, let me avenge his debt. My father served Lord John faithfully as High Steward of the Vale, Sir Albar Royce boomed. Let me serve his son in this. The gods favor the man with a just cause, said Sir Lynn Corbray. Yet often that turns out to be the man with the surer sword. We all know who that is, he smiled modestly. A dozen other men all spoke at once, clamoring to be heard. Tyrion found it disheartening to realize so many strangers were eager to kill him. Perhaps this had not been such a clever plan after all. Lady Lysa raised a hand for silence. I thank you, my lords, as I know my son would thank you if he were among us. No men in the Seven Kingdoms are so bold and true as the Knights of the Vale. Would that I could grant you all this honor. Yet I can choose only one, she gestured. Sir Vardis Egan, you were ever my lord husband's good right hand. You shall be our champion. Sir Vardis had been singularly silent. My lady, he said gravely, sinking to one knee, pray give this burden to another. I have no taste for it. The man is no warrior. Look at him. A dwarf, half my size, and lame in the legs. It would be shameful to slaughter such a man and call it justice. Oh, excellent, Tyrion thought. I agree. Lysa glared at him. You demanded a trial by combat. And now I demand a champion, such as you have chosen for yourself. My brother Jaime will gladly take my part, I know. Your precious Kingslayer is hundreds of leagues from here, snapped Lysa Aaron. Send a bird for him. I will gladly await his arrival. You will face Sir Vardis on the morrow. Singer, Tyrion said, turning to Marillion, when you make a ballad of this, be certain you tell them how Lady Aaron denied the dwarf the right to a champion and sent him forth lame and bruised and hobbling to face her finest knight. I deny you nothing, Lysa Aaron said, her voice peeved and shrill with irritation. Name your champion, imp, if you think you can find a man to die for you. If it's all the same to you, I'd sooner find one to kill for me. Tyrion looked over the long hall. No one moved. For a long moment, he wondered if it had all been a colossal blunder. Then there was a stirring in the rear of the chamber. I'll stand for the dwarf, Brunn called out. Eddard. He dreamt an old dream of three knights in white cloaks and a tower long fallen, and Lyanna in a bed of blood. In the dream, his friends rode with him, as they had in life. Proud Martin Cassel, Jory's father, faithful Theowell, Ethan Glover, who had been Brandon's squire, Sir Mark Riswell, soft of speech and gentle of heart, the Crannog man, Harlan Reed, Lord Dustin, on his great red stallion. Ned had known their faces as well as he knew his own ones, but the years leech at a man's memories, even those he has vowed never to forget. In the dream, they were only shadows, grey wraiths on horses made of mist. They were seven facing three, in the dream as it had been in life. Yet these were no ordinary three. They waited before the Round Tower, the red mountains of dawn at their backs, their white cloaks billowing in the wind. And these were no shadows. Their faces burn clear even now. Sir Arthur Dane, the Sword of the Morning, had a sad smile on his lips. The hilt of the great sword Dawn poked up over his right shoulder. Sir Oswald Went was on one knee, sharpening his blade with a whetstone. Across his white enameled helm, the black bat of his house spread its wings. Between them stood fierce old Sir Gerald Hightower,
the White Bull, Lord Commander of the King's Guard. I looked for you on the Trident, Ned said to them. We were not there, Sir Gerald answered. Woe to the usurper if we had been, said Sir Oswald. When King's Landing fell, Sir Jamie slew your king with a golden sword, and I wondered where you were.
Far away, Sir Gerald said, or Ares would yet sit on the Iron Throne, and our false brother would burn in seven hells.
I came down on Storm's End to lift the siege, Ned told them, and the Lords Tyrell and Redwine dipped their banners and all their knights bent their knee to pledge us fealty. I was certain you would be among them.
Our knees do not bend easily, said Sir Arthur Dane.
Sir Willem Darry is fled to Dragonstone with your queen and Prince Viserys. I thought you might have sailed with him.
Sir Willem is a good man and true, said Sir Oswald.
But not of the King's Guard, Sir Gerard pointed out. The King's Guard does not flee.
Then or now, said Sir Arthur. He donned his helm.
We swore a vow, explained old Sir Gerald. Ned's wraiths moved up beside him with shadow swords in hand. They were seven against three.
And now it begins, said Sir Arthur Dane, the sword of the morning.
He unsheathed Dawn and held it with both hands. The blade was pale as milk glass, alive with light.
No, Ned said with sadness in his voice. Now it ends.
As they came together in a rush of steel and shadow, he could hear Lyanna screaming, Eddard, she called. A storm of rose petals blew across a blood-streaked sky, as blue as the eyes of death.
Lord Eddard,
Lyanna called out again.
I promise, he whispered. Leah, I promise.
Lord Eddard,
a man echoed from the dark. Groaning, Eddard Stark opened his eyes. Moonlight streamed through the tall windows of the Tower of the Hand.
Lord Eddard.
A shadow stood over his bed.
How long?
The sheets were tangled, his legs splinted and plastered. A dull throb of pain shot up his side.
6 days and seven nights,
the voice was Vaughan Poole's. The steward held a cup to Ned's lips.
Drink, my lord.
What? Only water?
Maester Purcell said you would be thirsty.
Ned drank. His lips were parched and cracked. The water tasted sweet as honey.
The king left orders, Vaughan Poole told him, when the cup was empty. He would speak with you, my lord.
On the morrow, Ned said, when I am stronger. He could not face Robert now. The dream had left him weak as a kitten.
My lord, Poole said, he commanded us to send you to him the moment you opened your eyes.
The steward busied himself lighting a bedside candle. Ned cursed softly. Robert was never known for his patience.
Tell him I'm too weak to come to him. If he wishes to speak to me, I should be pleased to receive him here. I hope you wake him from a sound sleep and summon...
He was about to say Jory when he remembered.
Summon the captain of my guard.
Alan stepped into the bedchamber a few moments after the steward had taken his leave.
My lord, Poole tells me it has been 6 days, Ned said. I must know how things stand.
The Kingslayer is fled the city, Alan told him. The talk is he's ridden back to Castle Rock to join his father. The story of how Lady Catelyn took the imp is on every lip.
I have put on extra guards, if it please you.
It does, Ned assured him. My daughters?
They have been with you every day, my lord. Sansa prays quietly, but Arya...
He hesitated. She has not said a word since they brought you back. She's a fierce little thing, my lord. I've never seen such anger in a girl. Whatever happens, Ned said, I want my daughters kept safe. I fear this is only the beginning.
No harm will come to them, Lord Eddard, Alan said. I stake my life on that.
Jory and the others? I gave them over to the Silent Sisters to be sent north to Winterfell. Jory would want to lie beside his grandfather. It would have to be his grandfather, for Jory's father was buried far to the south. Martin Cassell had perished with the rest. Ned had pulled the tower down afterward and used its bloody stones to build 8 cairns upon the ridge. It was said that Rhaegar had named the place the Tower of Joy. But for Ned, it was a bitter memory. They had been 7 against 3.